are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner, Saturday, February 12th, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. DM's always open for you. And subscribe to the podcast so you get this bad boy once it goes live. We will talk to Rufus Peabody, professional bettor and the co-founder of Unabated. Rufus goes to Vegas every year to fire on Super Bowl props at the Superbook. He waits in line 7 o'clock Pacific the Thursday before the Super Bowl, like the week before the Super Bowl. He bombs these props. So we'll talk to him about the strategy and the logic and the numbers that he crunches. And he actually shares a couple of the positions he made. We also discuss the importance of inefficiencies in the market. And Rufus explains how he started betting for a living in his early 20s. So all that coming up later on in the show. Made it to Vegas, sitting in the Westgate right now. It was a long Friday. The direct flight from Boston to Seattle took 6 hours and 15 minutes, then a little layover, then Seattle to Vegas, in the air like 8 hours and 30 seconds, and when I land, wrap up a little bit of work, and hit the town, my spot, Naked City, got some wings, put down like 20 Buffalo wings, and probably 10 Jamesons. That's probably a fair number, 20 and 10, but I'm here, and I'm ready to rock, ready to roll, going to hit Fremont tonight and watch the game tomorrow out here in Vegas. You know the drill. This game has been discussed for about 2 weeks now. The early money was on the Rams. They laid 3.5, got to 4 pretty quickly, and then professionals also laid some 4. This is championship Sunday night and Monday morning, and then it sat at 4.5 for about a week, and then the Bengal money came in. And I've been told by several Las Vegas sportsbook directors, it's not even the Bengals money line that's the public side. It's the Bengals plus the points. Yes. Bengals plus 4 and plus 4.5 is like 65% of the bets at a couple different shops out here. That doesn't mean the Bengals can't win. It doesn't mean the Bengals can't cover. But when a guy that tells you, you know, usually we need this or we need that, they usually don't need the dog to lose in the Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? Like in the Super Bowl, usually it's favorite over. Last year, Chiefs over. The year before, Chiefs over. Bengals? All of a sudden? They're the hottest toy in the store right now, though. 7 straight covers. 6 of 7 wins, and the only game they lost is when they benched everybody in week 18. But the books are taking more Bengal bets. So take from that what you must. I don't like the side. I think a lot of people that bet this stuff professionally will tell you there's no edge. I still think the number's a little too low. Like, it doesn't make sense that the Rams are playing in essentially a home game, and it's only 4, 4.5. I know it's a corporate crowd, but still. The ability that the Rams have to keep their same routine can't be underestimated. The Rams are also a much more experienced team. Average age, like 27.5. 20 all-pro selections on the LA side. Meanwhile, the Bengals are the youngest team in the Super Bowl since 1980, and they have 0 all-pro selections. I had an odds maker tell me, look, the game should probably be 5.5, 6. But the problem with that is, as you know, as we've talked about on the show, there's a difference between odds making and bookmaking. You can make the number 5.5, 6, but you can't hang that number if you're taking bets. Because you know you're going to get that Bengals support no matter what. But the professionals, it's amazing how this works. The professionals will lay the Rams 3.5 and 4. And I think that's what the books wanted. But if you open Rams -6, guess what? Boom, the other way. Professionals likely take 6. So then you're taking pro money at 6, and you're writing it down to 5, 4.5, 4. This was probably the plan all along, to sort of crater the number at 4. As we sit here on a Saturday afternoon, I saw the South Point move to 4.5, and they're dealing -105 juice each way, which is really cool. But that's the number, and that'll be the number by kickoff. It'll be 4 or 4.5. The under was the move early, opened 51, and now we're down to 48.5. But I don't like side or total. You know the drill. I've got five props that we've played. And one of my buddies who bets for a living and does really well, he tried to bet our halftime tie position at 10-1 at DraftKings. He put in 500, submitted the bet, spin, decline. Nope. They did generously offer him a $5.67 stake to win $56. We won't take your $500 bet, but we will give you $5. Come on. What are we doing? It's the Super Bowl. Take a fucking bet. We got first quarter under 9.5. First half under 23.5. Longest field goal over 47.5. Rams to outpossess the Bengals minus a quarter. And the halftime tie 10-1. I talked with Jeff Benson at Circa about the halftime prop, which they don't have, but they have an alternative way to bet this. They have the double-double result, if you will. It's the halftime result and the game result. So, for example, Rams win first half and the game plus 105. Wow, very likely. Rams win first half and lose game plus 850. Bengals win first half, win game plus 325. Bengals win first half, lose game, plus 575. And here we go. First half tie, Rams win, 15-1. First half tie, Bengals win, 20-1. So if you don't have an out that's dealing a halftime tie, that's an alternative option for you. Circa probably has the best numbers, and I'm actually going to go bet that shit when I put this microphone away. You split a nickel, you go 250 at 15-1 and 250 at 20-1. You win either 37.50 or five stacks, and you take away the 250 from which everyone loses. So that's another way to bet halftime tie, the double-double. Just bet tie, and then Rams or Bengals. Simple. The American Gaming Association is estimating that 31 million Americans will wager $7.6 billion on this game. That is up quite a bit from the number last year, which I believe was closer to $5 billion. So we jumped $2.6 billion in one season. Here we go, up and to the right. And now 30 states plus D.C. taking bets. And that billion number, that's legal and illegal. That counts everything. Bookies, squares, pools, all that. $7.6 billion. And this week, I did a lot of media, a lot of radio, and the common questions are, what color's the Gatorade? Heads or tails? National anthem? You know, people are betting anything and everything in this game. Is Tupac going to show up with a hologram? I have no idea. We do know some things. I got a direct message from loyal listener Ed Murphy at Ed Murphy Shy. Cracked me up. I was fucking dying when I read this. Ed said, Sam, my wife wants me to ask you about the Gatorade color since you called it last time. What an amazing message. You can make bets on this. FoxBet, DraftKings, PointsBet, they're taking wagers on this. And depending on the shop, orange is the favorite, plus 250 or so. And then it gets weird. Like at one book, blue is plus 375, and another book, blue is 5-1. It's 450 on yellow here. It's 7-1 on yellow there. Clear is anywhere from 4-6. Red is 550 at FoxBet and 12-1 at DraftKings. So as we always say on Chicken Dinner, get the right price. If you live in a state like Illinois that has DraftKings and PointsBet, and you can take Red Gatorade at 5-1 here and 12-1 there, come on, just do your homework. Download these apps. Do your research. But I don't have a Gatorade tip. I apologize. We're all guessing at this point. I went back and listened to last year's episode when I was told by somebody on the South Side who was taking bets that they got slammed by Blue. Blue Gatorade all of a sudden was getting popped. Turns out somebody close to the Buccaneers let somebody on the South Side know that, hey, psst, we got Blue Gatorade. And Blue was going off last year like 8-1. And remember the guy that bet a nickel on the Gatorade? He hit the local book 500 at 8-1 to win four stacks and one. Those books got crushed last year on the Gatorade prop on the South Side. But we're all guessing the Gatorade this year. Last year we weren't. We saw the Chiefs dump orange the previous year, and then found out that the Bucs had blue. So you could have bet them both and won no matter what. While we don't have the Gatorade intel, a little birdie told me there's a very strong chance that Lose Yourself is the first song played at halftime. Eminem. You can find that offshore plus 250 or higher. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. I mean, I'm going to do it. Lose Yourself by Eminem. What I've been told. I've been told it's a good bet at plus 250. California Love is the favorite. Makes sense. I don't know. I know nothing about this. I know what I'm told. We also heard about the anthem rehearsals yesterday, and I think this is public knowledge now, unfortunately. The rehearsals, they had four of them on Friday. 149, 150, 150, 151. BetOnline opened this last week at 90.5 seconds. That's a minute 30. Now it's like a minute 50, a 20-second move on the anthem. And somebody told me that Warren Sharp, who works for NBC, by the way, NBC's doing the game, Warren Sharp actually released the national anthem over to his clients, I guess, and that blew it off the board. Isn't that, am I missing something? Can somebody who works for NBC give out national anthem over? I feel like that's a conflict of interest there, but whatever. I don't really care. Can't bet the anthem anymore, though, is the point. If you're waiting to bet this on Sunday and you see 150 and you go over, the edge is gone. That would be like betting a basketball total. Say the total opened at 135 and it got to 150 and you go over. It's the same thing. You're replacing points with seconds. You can't bet over now. If you have 145, cool. If you got 150, too bad. James Harden is now a Sixer. Superbook updated their title odds. This was, I think, Thursday. All my days ran together this week. But the Warriors now favored, plus 450, right next to the Phoenix Suns, plus 450. Bucks, 6-1. Sixers, 6-1. Nets, 10-1. Heat, 12-1. Jazz, 16-1. And the change for those two teams, Philly from 14-1 to 6-1, Nets, 6-1, out to 10-1. Now, those are numbers from Thursday. The Nets have been bet down again because they still have really good players. I mean, they still have Durant, Irving, Simmons. It's a good basketball team. Are they going to win the title? I don't think so. I told you guys about the Warriors before the season. I didn't think they were going to win the title. I thought they were a great bet to win the Western Conference at 5-1. Now they're less than 5-1 to win the whole thing. And the Nets, remember, the Nets were as low as plus 225 before the season started. 100 made you 225. That team is fascinating. And Paul Hembekidis, great stat guy for ESPN, at Paul Hembo. After all that, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden played 16 games and 364 minutes together. That's it. Ryan Butler, at Butler Betts. He reported the other day that Fubo TV is expanding its betting presence. They announced a market access deal in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Missouri via an agreement with Caesars. The online sportsbook is also live in Iowa, Arizona, and the company has market access deals in New Jersey, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Texas. You know, I was told by a sportsbook executive about 5 years ago that he envisioned a world where one day we are watching the game on our television and within two or three clicks on the remote, you can bet from your television. Now, that doesn't exactly work right now because there's the delay, but if these sports books and the leagues get together and share broadcast rights, then it's a whole different level. Then you're talking about real time and the ability to bet live, because now there's a 30-second delay on television? If you're at the stadium and a home run gets hit out of the park, you're watching it on the couch, you see the home run, 20, 30 seconds later. So if you could essentially beat the system. But there's got to be a reason that Fubo is partnering with all of these different books and going into all these different states. They see what's going on. They want a piece of the action, sure, but it has to be something where if you pay for Fubo and you get all these games, you bet with Fubo. So you're watching Kansas play Oklahoma and you're on Fubo and it's, a break in the action and then bam, boom, boom, I can make a live bet. That has to be the plan. I believe we're getting closer to a world where we can watch our games and bet from the TV, from your smart TV. It's got to happen. They'll figure it out. Which is crazy to think that we're here. You know, PASPA goes down May of 2018. 2013, you got league commissioners saying that gambling will ruin sports. Now stadiums are sponsored by sports books. The Caesars Superdome in New Orleans. We have come a long way, a long, long way on this. And I'm telling you, there's a reason. You follow the dollars, follow the money. There's a reason Fubo TV is expanding its betting presence. They want to take bets, but they want you to watch their product and bet with them. No doubt about it. Last thing, shortened show here, getting ready for the Super Bowl. Tree Bark Falafel. Oh, actually, no, before we get the Tree Bark, the bartender, forgot about the bartender. He came in hot with the Bengals to win the game and Joe Burrow to win the MVP, which is hysterical. You should probably just double up on one or the other. Odds are good if the Bengals win. Burrow plays the game of his life, and he wins the MVP. But our guy is going down swinging. He's 24-25-1 this year, and he's got the Bengals money line and Joe Burrow to win the MVP. Somebody tweeted at ChickenXCenter, how do we fade Burrow to win the MVP? I was cracking up. And somebody goes, well, just bet him over interceptions, which is interesting. How about this? Burrow over a half an interception, so throw a pick, has been bet up from minus 120 to minus 150. That's interesting. And another market that has moved quite a bit out here in Vegas, Burrow zero touchdown passes. It opened like 550. Circa's down to plus 375. So some professional players are shorting Joe Burrow. They're betting his completions under, his attempts over, interceptions over, and no touchdowns from plus 550 to about plus 370. And the bartender is on Burrow to win the MVP. Naturally, that's how it works. But I feel like the bartender outshadows how good Tree Bark Falafel has been this year. Our guy's 13-5 in the NFL. 13-5. Here's what he likes in the Super Bowl.
Hello, this is Tree Bark Falafel. Are you addicted to winning money yet? Because all I do is win, 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 no matter what. I keep giving you free money. I'm 13-5 this season. Now, I have the Super Bowl winner. Take the Rams, -4 against garbage Bengals. Everyone will cry in Cincinnati. Rams winning at home. Again, take Rams, -4. Enjoy the free money. Thank you.
There he is, Tree Bark Falafel, Los Angeles Rams, -4. Hoping to move to 14-5. Let's talk to Rufus Peabody. Joining us on Chicken Dinner, he's one of the best bettors that I have ever met. He's the co-founder of Unabated Sports. He also hosts Bet the Process with Jeff Ma. Rufus Peabody, at Rufus Peabody on the Twitter machine. What's up, pal?
Good to be here, Sammy. It's been too long.
I know.
I'm looking forward to seeing you in Vegas in just a few short days.
Last time I saw you in Vegas, I don't remember because it was Sunday night after the game. I think it was 10 o'clock Pacific. At that point, I might as well have been a puddle on the side of the road.
You know, that was my first time at that particular establishment that we were at. I don't remember a ton from it either.
So I want to get into your prop process and strategy, and I know that people are likely mining through your trash to figure out who you're going to bet in the prop game because that's your jam. You've been doing it forever. But I want to start with just how you got involved in the sports betting space. Everybody has a different beginning, whether it's, you know, reading the lines in the paper with your uncle, going to the games with your father, and he's got a nickel on the game. It could be a boss. It could be a job. How did you get your first taste of sports betting?
Well, first of all, I don't think I knew what a nickel was until I was 22 years old. So I did not come from a family with gambling in my blood or anything like that. I always loved the number side of sports, but I didn't even know. I mean, I knew point spreads existed, but I saw them in the newspaper growing up. That was basically all I knew. And so my sort of gambling story was that I happened to read an article in ESPN.com back in 2007 when I was a junior in college about this company called Las Vegas Sports Consultants. And Kenny White is a mutual friend of ours who ran Las Vegas Sports Consultants at the time. And it was Gene Wojcicki. He was there for Selection Sunday. And basically I learned about this company, which set odds or recommended opening odds for 90% of the sports books in the state of Nevada. And I was like, this looks like the coolest job ever. I want to go work there. And so I basically called and talked my way into an internship there, which I then, I guess, parlayed into a full-time job after college. And I did my senior thesis on psychological inefficiencies in the baseball betting market.
Your professor had to just, he or she had to just love that. And I really applaud the fact that you're a junior in college and you're just scratching the surface, but a whole year later, you're writing a thesis on the betting market for baseball. That's quite the 360 there.
Yeah, no, seriously. And then 2 years after that, I'm gambling for a living. So life comes at you fast. And there was no grand plan to become a professional bettor. It just, so many random things had to happen in my life for me to be doing what I'm doing right now. Like, any one of those things had not happened, I'd probably, I don't know, I have no idea what I would be doing, honestly. Hopefully something interesting, but certainly not this.
It's the domino effect for sure. Now, how many lessons have you sort of pulled from your background? You've got the BA in economics from Yale. How much of that have you been able to help shape your modeling, your strategy? Like, how much of that has helped what you do now and what you've done?
Oh, that was everything. I mean, when I taking econometrics, I think it was my junior year. I took two econometrics courses my junior year in college, and those kind of opened my eyes to, I guess, all sorts of different uses for those types of techniques, like regression-based techniques. And so that has been sort of the basis of everything I do, in a way. And so, I mean, a lot of it's problem solving, it's knowing the right questions to ask, and it's having the toolbox to answer those questions. So certainly without having that toolbox, I wouldn't be able to do what I do.
Toolbox, I think, is an understatement for what you've got. In fact, the first time we met, we were having a couple of pops on Causeway Street, and you got a text, I don't know who it was from, and you went into your backpack and said, I need like 5 minutes. And you like hauled your laptop out of the bag and slammed it on the bar, and you pulled up some program I've never even fucking seen ever. So this is something, it's not like, it's so advanced that I wouldn't even understand what you were doing when I'm looking at it, but this is something that I feel like it's important to understand this. If you're looking to do just a sliver of what Rufus does, you build what works, but then you also have to adjust and adapt to what doesn't work, correct?
100%. Sports are always changing. I mean, think about how different football is now from what it was 20 years ago. And if you were trying to handicap it and you had a model from 20 years ago, you're probably going to be left in the dust.
The safety prop used to be 14-1 in the Super Bowl. Now you're lucky to find a 7-1. The other prop that I found just fascinating is the two-point conversion. Will there be a successful two-point conversion? That used to be like 8-1. Now it's -110.
Was it? I guess it was back before the longer extra points, but I don't think it was 8-1. It was never that high.
I may have my wires crossed on this, but I remember we used to bet successful attempt was about 7 or 8-1. Even if it's a dollar less, it's still drastically different than what it was. And I think you've sort of gained this knowledge over the last, I don't know, maybe 3, 4, 5 years since PASPA goes down. These markets aren't as inefficient as they used to be.
No, you're right. They've gotten more efficient. I would say Super Bowl props have gotten a lot more efficient, at least with the openers, just because you have these European style books that are booking props, like game props, and a lot of these esoteric props every single week of the year for NFL games. And so it's not the case like it used to be, where they were pricing things like this once a year. Like, I remember the Win would always open, will there be a roughing the passer penalty called at -115, -115? And I would always hammer the no. Those types of things don't really exist anymore, because all these books can look towards the books that are booking these particular types of props every single week and have an idea of what to do.
Yeah, there's precedent now. I didn't think about how you now have that market week to week when it used to be annually. It was once a year you can bet on player X to have 5.5 receptions over under. Now there's a baseline there, essentially. But I'll tell you what, man, I still look at a guy like Cooper Kupp this year who has a receiving yardage prop on the low side of 104.5, on the high side of 106.5.
Oh, wait, I've seen 108.5 to just now on the in Las Vegas. It's Caesars William Hill app. It's 108.5.
Oh, I see Caesars. Okay, so this is a little outdated.
Well, no, it's a different line set. Nevada has a different Caesars line than does, you know, outside of Nevada.
You have to be willing to fire on that at anything north of 110.5, right?
For sure. You know, the funny thing is Cup has averaged 117 yards a game this season, and his median's 116.5. So just based on that, you'd say, oh, well, the over's a good bet. But honestly, there's some regression to the mean. It's just so hard to sustain performance at that type of level. So, yes, and that's a good example of what I think legalization has done to the market on game day and closer as sort of Super Bowl week progresses. And the fact that you have more and more people betting, more of the recreational bettors out there. And you also have a lot of people that, you know, maybe bet once a year and it's on the Super Bowl. And those people love betting on the marquee players to do well. They like betting on the overs. They like betting on, yes, this guy will score a touchdown. They like betting that there will be a safety. And so there's a lot of value for someone like myself to wait on these marquee players and fire unders when those numbers get inflated on game day.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, Rufus, and I'm going to guess that your favorite betting Super Bowl was Rams-Patriots. Like 3 years ago, 13-3, and your least favorite wagering Super Bowl is Eagles Patriots, 41-33. Am I close?
You're pretty close. Eagles Patriots is definitely Eagles Patriots was one of the worst.
Everything hit. All the overs hit. Everything hit.
Yeah, I had and I'll tell you that Super Bowl, I had one over for sure that I remember, and it was Brandon Cooks, and he got concussed halfway through the game or in the first half, and so. That just, you know, the other bit players that, you know, had their roles increase as a result. So that wasn't very good. But the Rams one was fantastic. And actually, surprisingly, the Patriots-Falcons game that went to overtime was really good. Because I had a lot of James White overs, and he was the one guy that went berserk. And so somehow that one worked out.
He should have won the MVP that year. I had a buddy who had, I think, $100 on him at 125-1. And he was going postal after the game. He's like, the guy scored 3 touchdowns.
It might have been 4.
How did he not win the award?
I don't know. And I mean, similarly, a few years ago when Kansas City won, Damian Williams, I had Damian Williams MVP tickets, and I thought for sure that wins. And because Mahomes didn't have a great game at all. I think he had 2 interceptions, a touchdown, 2 interceptions maybe, and yet he still won it.
Did you make any big long shot wagers? Did you bet McPherson at 200-1 or anybody like that for MVP?
I did not. I haven't bet a single MVP bet this year.
Okay, that's interesting. What do you make of this number? I'm staring at a book right now that's offering me what a deal this is. I can bet Cooper Kupp to score a touchdown at -190 anytime.
That's an awful bet.
I know, but people are still betting it.
Yeah. And the thing is, there's no that's not a two-way market. And I think for recreational bettors, hell, for any bettor out there, if you're looking at these markets that you're quoting, which are where you can bet on something but not bet against it, you don't really have a way of seeing what the actual juice is there. And so oftentimes and almost all the time, you're getting a really, really bad price there. In Nevada, if they offer Cooper Kupp, yes, touchdown -190, they have to offer a no. And so you're going to get a more fair price generally when you have sort of a two-way market rather than a multi-way market, but then also rather than this sort of one-way market where you don't even know what you can't bet on the other side. In Nevada, they can't offer a yes without offering a no.
But you're not going to get, it's not going to be 90-60 there. This is an American book, as I call it. I imagine they don't have 90-60 on Cup.
Correct. I can look and see what they have. But the thing is, no book would be offering -190 if they had to offer the no. Also, it's just because they can price gouge because they, you know, there's no way of for most people. I mean, they don't have to offer the other side, and most consumers are not really price discriminating. And so, you know, it's a fantastic deal for a sports book and a very bad deal for a consumer.
That's happening quite a bit, unfortunately. Is there a market that you just can't wait to be created in the Super Bowl? Like, if there's, is there anything in the back of your brain where you're like, ooh, I wish that was offered?
That's a good question. I feel like I don't have anything off the top of my head, but I think I need a little more time on that, but I'm sure I could come up with some interesting ones.
Come on, just push a couple of keys. What does it spurt out?
I don't know. I mean, who has the second reception of the game? No, I'm just kidding.
For years, I had a buddy who used to say, you know, one of these days, there's going to be a market on a kicker to hit the upright or the crossbar.
And now there is.
Yeah. And I think the second year that you were able to bet that, it hit because one of the guys doinked one in the Super Bowl. But that was, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we didn't have shit like that. And I remember sitting in the back with Jay Cornegay, you know, back in the day when he's at the IP, him and Sammons and Sherman and them, they're watching Super Bowls where the final score is like 55-18. And everybody's leaving the book at half. And it's, the book isn't really generating interest because there's nothing aside from a couple props here and there, the side, the money line, the total. But the props were sort of a result of a lot of shitty blowout games.
Yeah, and it's funny how it's really turned into the big event for the game. I mean, it's most of their handle, I feel like, is coming from props. But by the way, I thought of a unique prop. You know how there's something like, will there be three unanswered scores? Mm-hmm. That's a common one. What about like, will a team have a first down on four consecutive plays or five consecutive plays?
Oh yeah, and that'd be I'm gonna guess that'd probably be about what 22-1 true odds.
No, I think that's probably a favorite.
On four straight plays?
Yeah, you get a first down. You have another. I mean, yeah, I think, I don't know. Honestly, I really don't know. I'd have to look at the data, but I think, you know, you have enough drives, enough plays where all you really need, you convert a third down and then you have a few plays that are 10 plus yards.
That's interesting.
On average, what, 20% of plays are 10 plus yards? So, yeah.
And I mean, whatever the true number is, you're not going to get true odds on it because you don't get that stuff anymore.
Well, you can bet the no.
Did you have a bet that you couldn't wait to strike when you got in line on Thursday at 7 o'clock Pacific? Did you have a bet or two you knew you were going to make before the market moved?
Not before the market opened, but when I looked up at the odds board, or actually the sheet that they handed out, there were certainly ones that I circled immediately as like, this is great value. I think, let's see what I bet. I bet Tyler Boyd over 14.5 longest reception. And I don't even like Boyd. So I should say that I was looking to bet things that are going to, well, bet overs and bet things that I know won't be available come Super Bowl weekend, because the public is going to be betting stuff up. And so I was kind of looking for the things where, you know, if I don't get it now, I'm not going to get it ever. And so that was one of them. I bet some of the more esoteric stuff. I bet under 6.5 Bengals with a pass reception at even money.
Under 6.5 Bengals with a reception. The guy, I was actually really surprised to see that Westgate number on Cam Akers. That thing has almost come full circle. They opened it 68.5 for rushing yards on Akers. Mm-hmm. And then it got all the way down to 59.5, and now it's back to 64.5. So it went down, then it went back up, and I don't know where it goes next couple days.
Well, you know what, Sam? It's probably going to go up. That's what happens. I mean, they set a number, it gets pounded by professionals, and then the public ends up shaping it. And that's where, and then there's opportunities for professionals again on game day.
Yeah, they could go under 68.5, and then when it craters down, I mean, this is part of your life where if you hit it, if you're first in line and you get a little 68.5, 67.5, and then, you know, 12 hours later at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning, gets 59.5, and then you could just create a nice little 8-point middle or 8-yard middle for yourself, and that's a very realistic landing zone.
It is, although personally I'm not betting the over there. You know, I'm only looking for an arb if both sides of those arb or middle, I should say, in this case, but if both sides of it are positive on their own.
You've got numbers and projections, models on what? Do you have models on pretty much everybody on the field here on the offensive side of the ball?
Yes, sir.
How long does that take? And what is that process even like?
So there's a lot of code I have written, so processes that are automated, but at the same time, there's a ton of art to it because – you know, there's different, I mean, like think about trying to project out Cam Akers' usage against Sony Michel, and then what happens if Daryl Henderson comes back? I mean, there's no model that's going to tell you that exactly, just because a lot of it's like trying to get in Sean McVay's head. But the crux of it is it comes down to who, you know, projecting time on the field, and then usage is a function of that. So I want to know what percentage of the routes, what percentage of pass plays will Van Jefferson be running a route on, that type of thing. And from there, I want to know how often Van Jefferson is going to be targeted per route run. And so that's stuff I model. And then I'm able to sort of start with these team level projections and then assign individual projections as a function of that. So it all adds up to what that team's going to achieve. So if I have like, you know, if I have the Lion, I keep thinking Lions in my head.
He's a Lion. The Rams, he's always a Lion.
You know, if I have him at like 24.7 completions, then, you know, the receivers are going to add up to 24.7 receptions. The receivers and, you know, tight ends, running backs, et cetera.
I made one bet here, and I wanted you to critique this. I know you don't like doing this because you keep to yourself and you don't really worry about what other people are doing, but I made the following bet because I still think there's a little value. The opening kickoff, no touchback, is ruined from plus 230, 240 to now minus 110, plus 100. The safety is ruined. The overtime prop is ruined. But this one I don't think is ruined just yet, but it might be after I hit it this year. The halftime tie is 10-1 still. 10-1, not bad. I went back through the last 17 Super Bowls. We've seen it three times in 17 tries. That's 18%. And we've also seen it two times in the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. 10-10 Niners Chiefs, 14-14 Patriots and Seahawks. You know the drill. I need 13-13, 17-17, 14-14, whatever. I like that number of 10-1. I feel like that one is still, I have a little bit of an edge still.
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree with you on that one, unfortunately.
It's okay.
I'm trying to find my where my sheet is with all my numbers on it. I believe I have it somewhere around the 7-8% range. But, you know, certainly I would say just looking at past Super Bowls isn't going to tell you that much. I mean, you've had three safeties in a row from, I think, 2012 to 2014. Mm-hmm. And there was another one back in 2009. So, you know, if in my lifetime, basically betting Super Bowl props, there's been four safeties in 14 years or something like that. But clearly the base rate is not 4 out of 14, right? So I think for me, I just model it as a function of the, you know, the spread and the total. So I do think one thing that might be in your favor a little bit is if you believe in the sort of narrative that teams start slower in the first half in the Super Bowls, which has been something that has existed in the past, or that has been, first halves have been much lower scoring than second halves. But a lot of that's been the Patriots. You know, the Patriots famously have never scored a touchdown in the first quarter in their entire run of two decades of Super Bowls. So
yeah, you're right. I'm giving you 3 out of 17 and 2 out of 7. But even if I take it out to 56, that's not nearly a big enough sample size to give you, oh, well, this happened in X amount of 56, because 56 is still a small number.
Oh, I got my number here. I have the no tie minus 1381 is my price.
Well, maybe plus 950, 10-1. So you don't see any edge and you're not going to bet it. Plain and simple.
No. No, I would gladly lay minus 900 on the no for sure.
I thought you were going to say you'd lay 1300, and I would say, well, I disagree with that.
I'd lay minus 1200 if you wanted to take plus 1200 with me.
What's your advice to somebody, Rufus? Last question, then I'll let you go here, and I can't wait to see you on Sunday. If somebody were to say, you know, you're doing a panel or a Q&A like you often do, and somebody says, Rufus, I got a question for you. What's the best piece of advice you can give me if I'm looking to jump into the sports betting space? You can take this any which way. This is a 25-year-old kid, a novice. He hasn't gambled all that much. What would you tell this person?
Okay. So if the person is, if it's a novice who's trying to become a better sports bettor or lose less or eventually win, I would say, first off, the biggest thing you can do to help your return is to get multiple outs and price shop. That's one thing that, I mean, you can cut the house edge, probably trim it more than in half that way. For someone that's looking to get into the business in a more serious way, I would say collect data, scrape data, build things and test them. I think what's beautiful about this is that you can test your theories. And if you have the data to do so, you can look and see if you actually would have had an edge making these particular bets. And so I think being able to backtest models and things like that is an extremely valuable thing to do, because you want to look before you leap.
You're also trying your damnedest to make people more intelligent at Unabated. You and Captain Jack have come together and put your brains together and your resources together. Unabated.com, at Unabated Sports. What do you got on the horizon there?
We have a lot of interesting things on the horizon. We have a lot of interesting things on the site already. We have an odd screen that we just launched recently. Yep. There's going to be a lot of improvements to that. What's unique about it is that it integrates our trading tools. So you can actually compare lines and say, would I rather bet the Rams -4 or lay -190 on the money line? Which one's a better bet? You know? So being able to sort of compare lines and say which one's better, I think it's been really useful to me actually in my own betting, because I don't know whether +3 -115 or +131 is better off the top of my head. So things like that. We have great educational stuff, and we actually are going to be debuting some in-game trading tools in the next month or so for basketball, where you can actually, you know, be able to compare lines in game. Would you rather take -2.5, -110, or, you know, -3 +110 on this basketball game with 8 minutes to go, you know, things like that. So we're trying to help people be more intelligent bettors and to think for themselves.
The more tools in the tool belt, the better off you're going to be. That's for sure. That's Rufus Peabody, at Rufus Peabody on Twitter. I'm going to text you at halftime when it's 10-10. And hopefully I will see you at some point on Sunday night, pal. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Sam.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Record check 221, 222, and 8, -2. We got 5. First quarter under. First half under. Tie at the half. Longest field goal over. And the Rams to outpossess the Bengals. Coming up on the show, Ben Brust will join us, former Wisconsin Badger. He played in the Final Four, so he knows how to get there. He's an ESPN radio host right now in Madison. He'll join us next Tuesday. Cash some tickets, make some money, enjoy the Super Bowl, and let's go halftime tie.